This is basically a follow-up paper of my NSS paper, which I presented this February, also in San Diego, which is about amplification denial of service attacks abusing UDP-based protocols. And to just give a brief recap, UDP-based amplification attack works as follows. You have an attacker on the left-hand side, which tries to exhaust the bandwidth of a victim on the right-hand side by abusing so-called amplifiers. And the principle behind this is actually very simple. The attacker would IP spoof the packets, so he would impersonate the IP address of the victim, so that the amplifiers in the middle would send the replies back to the victim instead of the attacker. So to give you one concrete example, the attacker would send a DNS request towards open resolvers out there, which are the amplifiers in this case, and the open resolvers would respond to the victim. So in the sense of the response are much larger than the requests, so that effectively the attacker, the victim is overwhelmed with large responses. And this is very easy to abuse for many UDP-based protocols, as I've shown in the NS paper. So you can basically abuse DNS, which is very famous, or the network time protocol, NTP, and it gives you 1,000-fold amplification. So by sending one byte out, the attacker can trigger a 1,000-byte response on average by the amplifiers. So we've seen very large attacks of this style. I think in February this year, we have the largest ever attack, which was 400 gigabits per second. And so far, it's being assumed that these attacks can only happen for stateless protocols like UDP protocols, which are not connection-oriented. In this paper, we basically show that similar things or even worse things are even possible with TCP. A brief recap about TCP. Normally, you wouldn't expect there is any amplification in TCP because we have the three-way handshake, which means that normally the client establishes the connection by sending a SYN frame, a SYN segment to the server. The server sends back a SYN ACK, and only if the client again sends an ACK packet, the connection can be considered as established. So in the worst case, if the attacker tries to abuse this handshake, what you would see is that there is a SYN packet to the amplifier, and the amplifier would send a single SYN ACK packet to the attacker, to the victim. And the victim obviously doesn't send the ACK segment because he really didn't want to have this connection. This is what you would see in theory, at least, and it shows you that TCP, in theory, doesn't allow any amplification. It allows you to reflect traffic, yes, so the SYN packet will be reflected by a SYN ACK packet, but really doesn't allow you to amplify the traffic. In practice, things are a bit different. We've basically found three different attack types that attackers can use to abuse TCP for amplification attacks. The first one is based on the fact that many servers actually keep retransmitting SYN ACK packets if there is no ACK packets sent by the client, which is probably due to packet loss, so that there is some retransmission in case the initial SYN ACK packet was lost, so that the server keeps responding with more and more SYN ACK packets. And we found that there's like thousands of servers out there that work this way. And it's actually, if you look at the Linux, it's the default. So if you take any Linux system, you would see that there is normally six SYN ACK packets coming back from the system. It's actually a very, very easy amplification factor. The second type of attack that we found, and which we're very surprised to see, is that many servers actually already respond with data, although the handshake hasn't been completed yet. Which is kind of dumb, especially in the from the perspective of amplification attacks, but it probably is like motivated by the fact that this way the server can save one round trip time to send the first data to the client. So we've seen many FTP servers and tenant servers which send you normal a banner like a welcome banner, hey, this is server XYZ. And this is already included in the push data, which is sent to the client before the three-way handshake is finished, which is kind of problematic from the perspective of amplification attacks. Also, I mean, these two types of attacks happen if there is an open server, right? So the server has some service running on a particular port we can send a SYN packet to, and there will be some response. If the port is closed, so there is no server running, you would expect that there is normally nothing happening, or even no response, or a single reset packet. to indicate that the service is not available or an ICMP arrangeable, whatever you would expect. But in theory, again, you would see only a single reset packet floating back from the servers, and this is also what it actually should be. The bad thing here is, again, that we found that a few servers actually keep responding with many reset packets over time, again, probably to accomplish packet loss. There's really no good ratio behind this. And we found that servers keep responding thousands of these reset packets over time, so it's really like bad TCP stack implementations out there. We next wanted to see what the actual impact of this threat is, so how many servers we can find out there and what kind of servers these are. So our basic methodology was first to do large-scale scan. So we basically chose very prevalent protocols out there like FTP, Telnet, HTTP, which are all TCP-based, and then scan the whole IPv4 address range, but just sending a single SUN packet to all the IP addresses that we scan. We then filter on hosts that have an amplification factor of at least 20, which means by sending one SUN packet out, we got at least 20 responses back, or accordingly larger packets back. And then we did some classification on the attack types that we can find, and also on the amplifiers. And we came up with a couple of countermeasures against these types of attacks. The scans revealed that there is really literally millions of systems out there, again, that you can unfortunately abuse with these kinds of attacks. The first table here shows the number of SUNACK amplifiers that we find, so amplifiers that send many SUNACK packets back. Basically, on the left column, you can see the number of amplifiers that we found. So for example, for FTP, we found about 3 million amplifiers, which have an average amplification factor of 22 in this case. So for FTP, that's not too bad, but if you focus, for example, on SIP, there is probably some bad voice over IP phones out there that have really aggressive SUNACK retransmissions, which allow you to amplify the traffic by a factor of 1,600. This is even more compared to the UDP-based attacks that we have found so far. The second type of attack, the push-based attack, was not that prevalent. We found a few of them out there, but only hundreds, maybe thousands of servers that send push data, which is also not the standard and should really not happen. This is really a buggy TCP stack implementation. And the third kind of amplifiers, the reset amplifiers, are not so many also, but it's a bit scary what kind of amplification factor they allow. So we found thousands of systems for all these protocols that we scanned, but on average you can see that they have like tens of thousands amplification factor, which is really a bad thing, and it's just because of the artifact that they have in their TCP stack implementations. Another thing that was interesting to us is to see at what frequency these responses are being sent, because normally you would expect that the SUNACK frames, for example, are sent at a much lower frequency as would be necessary for an attack with a high impact. But it seems that, for example, the reset frames are sent with very high frequency. If you look at the right column here, it shows the number of reset packets being sent within the first 10 seconds, the first 30 seconds, and the first 60 seconds after we have sent the SUN packets, and showing that you, again, get 1,000 of packets back from a single amplifier within 60 seconds. So it kind of shows that there is high impact from at least the reset style of an attack. Next, we really try to understand what kind of systems are these. We try to fingerprint them to find out what kind of operating systems they run, what kind of devices we found there. And yeah, the basic message here is that it's a really diverse landscape of devices that have these amplification vulnerabilities, but especially one network equipment type, typically routers, stood out with a vendor which is called Cyxl, which apparently developed its own operating system, and they have such kind of, well, I would call it buggy TCP stack implementation that allow this kind of reflection attacks. It's pretty bad, and of course we contact the vendors and they say, oh, we want to go fix it, but as I know, it will take like years until these routers disappear from the landscape. So this is kind of an attack that we can probably count on in the future. The good thing is there is counterattacks that we can use, and counterattacks in the sense of not like blocking traffic, but actually active defense techniques that we can use. For example, to stop the Synax storms from the victim's perspective, we could just send a single reset segment to the amplifiers, and then they would stop the traffic. In our experiments, we have scanned with the SYN segment, and we have never actually responded with the reset segment. But then we did a separate scan and then enabled the reset packets being sent back to the amplifiers, and we saw that about 99.9% of the traffic really ceased after that. So it's a kind of active defense measure that you can do once you are under attack with this SYNX storm. Also, for the reset storm, it's possible not sending reset back. In this case, that doesn't work. But we found out by just fuzzing a bit, by brute forcing, that you can send ISMP port unreachable messages in this case, and this will stop these Synos cycle devices to stop their reset storm. So basically, once you are under attack by these devices, you can again initiate some active countermeasure to get these attacks stopped. So to conclude the talk, I think it's important to also look at other types of protocols, not only UDP, but also TCP. And it's a bit frightening that already the TCP handshake, although it was designed to resist such kind of attacks, now seems to be like one of the main causes that could be abused for TCP-based attacks. As we said, we notified the vendors. It will take some time, I guess, to propagate the updates, if the updates will ever happen. But I think if you are on attack, or if network operators are on attack, they can use these active countermeasures to prevent these kind of attacks. So it's a bit unclear to me if these attacks would work in practice, because there's these nice countermeasures that you can do. Thanks also to my co-authors. This work was done while I was working at University in Bochum with Mark Kura and Thomas Hupperich and Thorsten Holz. And I now move to Saarbrücken University. And yeah, thank you very much for your attention.
Just a comment on CyXL. You can't even do an NMAP scan through a CyXL with NET on. It will die. Mm-hmm. So much for their TCP stack.
Yeah, it's weird. they also don't respond too well to requests, but yeah.
Those effects, especially the reset storms, they have been used in the past. Not for DDoS, but for detecting crashing services, because many operating systems, for example, when you manage to crash a service, they will reset storm you.
Okay, interesting.
Could you talk about the tool you use to do the opening system fingerprint?
Oh yeah, so what we did basically is we have this custom built scanner, and it also is able to do some TCP based fingerprints. So basically we try to contact each host that we found to be an amplifier and get as much information out of it as we could. Basically get, for example, HTTP header information, FTP banner strings, telnet banner strings, and then we have a collection of 1,800 custom-built regular expressions, which basically classify these devices. We've used this also for a paper that we'll present tomorrow at USENIX, where it made much more sense to use them, because it was not all of this was CyXL. But we use them here again, like just custom-built regular expressions.
Referro. So just curious, why wouldn't you use NMAP's OS fingerprinter?
We also use NMAP fingerprints, but they're kind of limited in our experience. And we basically combine both. So we have our custom-built regular expressions plus the NMAP strings. Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah, Xenos. I never heard of it.
Mm-hmm. we got plenty of time for questions, even though don't move too fast, because we're going to have our program chair just after that giving the closing remarks. But before that, let's close up with Christian. Any more questions? Nobody? Thank you, Christian.
Okay, thanks.